you didn't even want me around. And you knocked my love, and you know that's a lie. 'Cause I'm a good man when the flag goes down. I'm gonna drive like I've never been hurt. Down the road like you never lied. I'll find my way like I've never been lost. You never laughed and I never cried. I'll say goodbye to all my friends. That won't take too very long. They'll be real big men someday. Never gonna miss me when I'm gone. I'm gonna drive like I've never been hurt. I'll be long gone like you never lied. I'll find my way like I've never been lost. And you never laughed and I never cried. If my drag shoe fails, baby, I don't care. 'Cause I'm gonna cry. I've never been hurt. Be long gone like you never lied. Find my way like I've never been lost. And you never laughed. I never cried. Yeah. I'm gonna drive like I've never been hurt. Down the road. Never been lost. You never laughed, and I never cried.
Oh, my car is good. I can prove it. Look at it. You know, she told me that I couldn't drive and the car weren't no good. But you know, I had the 49 crank, I had the 24 stud head, I had the Lincoln gears. I had the Ford 9-inch rear end, yeah, I had it. I had the Thompsons in the back, Bert Jakes Magneto in the front. I went down to Tony Nancy and got a bleated interior. He said it looked good. She told me she didn't like it. Said I couldn't drive. And the car was no good to nobody. Look here, I'm going. I'm gonna hit the road. I ain't coming back. I'm gonna drive. I ain't gonna cry. Oh, no.
I'm Beto Arcos. It's the Global Village. I'm very, very pleased to have in studio Mr. Ry Cooder. And opening this first hour, the second hour of the program, with his new record, I, Flathead, the songs of Cash, Buck, I hope I pronounced this right, and the Clowns. And this is the opening piece. What a song. Drive Like I Never Been Hurt. Ry, welcome to the show. Long time no see in this very studio.
Hello, Beto.
How are you?
I'm really good, thank you.
Well, I mean, where do we start? When we talk about your work, we have to start somewhere. And I wish that I had the sort of gift of gab right now to ask you, where do you start with this project? Where, how do you begin to tell the story of the songs of Cash, Buck, and the Clowns?
Yes, I don't know, to tell you the truth. I mean, some people have asked, what are we going to do here? You know, when they sit down with me about this. But to me, it's things that I remember. It mostly has to do with when I was quite a bit younger and the stuff that I heard on the radio and the car magazines I looked at, you know. So it sort of goes back to that time, which is the time of these hot rods and the these well, what do you call them, sort of Southeast Los Angeles aircraft workers, or in this case, Cash Buck is meant to be a, he works at Farmer John in Vernon. And then at night he has a little band, you know. I mean, types of people, unremarkable. If you saw them on the street, you wouldn't look twice. But behind every door is an interesting story, I guess you could say.
Now, this record is, there are two versions of this record.
Yeah.
One is the sort of humble record in this, you know, paper sleeves that they make these days. It includes some wonderful artwork, the sort of introduction to the story and the lyrics to all the songs and all the personnel, all the musicians that participated in the recording. The other version, which is the version that I want you to certainly address, is the version of the book. There's a book, a novella, as it's, I guess it's called, that includes the record, and it's a novella in how many chapters? In several chapters. It has an epilogue, and it has a sort of a prologue, if you will, a part one. So you really had something else in mind for this record. You had this vision that it was going to be music, but there was going to be stories to tell behind every song and behind all the characters.
Right. Well, see, it occurred to me, I started when I was doing Chavez Ravine back in 2005 or whenever that was. And I thought, okay, so the Mexicans are over there in Chavez Ravine and all that is going on, the evictions and the Frank Wilkinson story and J. Edgar Hoover and Chief Parker and that whole episode, very contained, very historic and known about. But what about this across town, you might say, this great mass of blue-collar white guys and people? You know, what about their stories? They got stories, but how are you going to do that? I thought that would be fun because then I might could get to some of this country swing that I used to like when I was a kid and listened to on the radio all the time. But it seemed, right away, it seemed obvious to me that every turn of the road, you'd run into Merle Travis, you know. You'd be banging into Merle. He already wrote the book. He said everything, you know, so round, so firm, so fully packed and all that stuff. He illuminated that whole experience once and for all. So then it occurred to me, maybe the idea would be to tell the stories of these people as a narrative. Then from their characters and their lives would come the song topics. You see, rather than trying to rewrite Merle, which nobody should ever try to do. So I started messing with the story and getting the characters down. And that took a while. But I found I liked doing it. It gave me a lot of relaxation to just sit there and dream up these people without any thought to product, you know, or that. And after a while, I got to where I saw where the songs lay, and then it didn't seem to me to be so much trying to couple myself or attach myself to the genre which has been covered. I mean, we all know that. Although there's a couple of tributes, you have to tip your hat to Merle a bit.
The what I find in the record throughout from beginning to the end are not only different sort of sounds, different genres of music I'm hearing, including a little bit of Hawaiian influence in there. But I also hear a very strong kind of California country twang.
It's Los Angeles. You see, Los Angeles was a destination for so many people from the border south, Texas, Arkansas. We know from the 30s and the Dust Bowl, and then the defense plants during the war, and that's who came here, hundreds of thousands, and they liked their music and they wanted to hear it, and so the musicians started coming here, Joe Mathis, Merle Travis, Speedy West, Cliffy Stone, and all these cats emigrated because the work was here and the record business was here, Capitol Records to be exact. And they saw there was this tremendous audience, so they made a point of, you know, creating this country, in those days they called it Country Western Division of Capitol Records, which, you know, they were in the jazz business and the pop business, but they saw we can market to these people and then... And they started doing this kind of, I'm thinking of Jimmy Bryant and Speedy West, this jet-propelled jive country music with very often the rhythm section was actually jazz players, you see? So there was a level of sophistication that occurred. Roy Hart was a jazz drummer who played on most of those dates. And so these cats were skilled, you know, and sharp. and musically sophisticated, and that blended with some of these, the reigning geniuses, you know, like Speedy and Merle Travis of the day, to combine into this Los Angeles country swing music is really pretty amazing. A lot faster, a lot better. You know, who's better than that? Nobody. And that's the stuff I used to hear on the radio, because there was KXLA was the little radio station that played this stuff night and day, which I discovered when I was in the fourth grade. Somebody gave me a radio, and so I quit going to school. So marginally went to school, and, you know, I would say, well, I'm sick, I can't go to school. So I could sit there and listen to this stuff and think, who are these people and where are they? You know, like, where is this happening? And that it was happening right in Los Angeles.
I'm looking at my son, Agustin, who's here with us, too. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, so when you were his age, he's about to enter the fourth grade, you started listening to this sound.
Oh, I discovered it. I didn't know it existed. Never heard anything like it, except in the bars up on Ocean Park Boulevard in South Santa Monica, where Douglas Aircraft was. It was 24 hours a day since the war, making airplanes.
Yeah.
And I remember, and the bars were open 24 hours a day, interestingly enough. And they had the jukeboxes, and they played this stuff. So you got to hear it. You could wander up there and listen at the door, you know, any time of the day or night. So that's that and the radio station. So I began to think, you know, who are these people? Where is this happening? What is this all about? And then, of course, little by little, I learned that, well, they're making records, and that's what you hear. And somebody makes these records, and then they go and they put them on the radio. So I didn't know that. You don't know that at age eight. I have no idea. It was coming from town. It was right here. You could have gone to the famous Riverside Rancho in Los Feliz and seen these guys on stage at night. They would record during the day or whatever they would do, and then they would hit the stage in these little country western clubs all over Los Angeles. I never did, but I could have.
My guest is Rye Cooter. His new record is called I, Flathead, The Songs of Cash Buck and the Clowns. It's out on Nonesuch. It actually was in stores June 24th, I believe, about a month or so, a month and a half ago. And it's, again, there are two versions of it. One is the sort of humble, simple record with, you know, cardboard and the lyrics. And the other one, the one which, you know, which I personally recommend people get, because you get the whole enchilada, as we like to say, is the book, the novella. It's about 100 pages, and it includes the record, and it's just beautifully bound. What a project, Rye! This must not have been easy for the label to take.
Well, they didn't see themselves as being in this kind of packaging business. But I just said, hey, this is the way it's got to be. I need this done this way so I can get the word out. That's what you're trying to do, is get your message out, your story out there, however you do it. And we're not in a fancy age anymore of the ability to market these things, but I think it's good. Plus, you can buy both. You can have the little vehicle model in your car, the portable one, and keep the book at home for those, you know, in those leisure hours when you're not working your three jobs and
all that. All right. Well, would you introduce this next piece? It's called Steel Guitar Heaven. Steel guitar. It's an instrument that you've played for God knows. I don't know.
I'm no steel guitar player. I wanted to be when I was a kid. You know, that's the flat one with the legs. And you sit at it as though it was a table. So it's out in front of you, these necks, sometimes several in different tunings. And this was the instrument of country music, of course, this that gave it its signature sound. I never learned to do it. I'm no good at it. But the story interests me because steel guitar players are a strange world of these folks, and they lead funny lives, and they're sidemen, and they're off in their own world. And the story I love so much is that Buddy Emmons, one of the gods, his wife told how she would go to bed at night and fall asleep, and he'd be sitting up in bed with this thing in his lap, if you imagine a tabletop with strings, unamplified, hopefully, practicing. And she woke up in the morning, he'd be there, hadn't moved, practicing. And it takes that kind of dedication and that kind of focus to become good at this. It's an impossible instrument to be good at. So, but very often these people were, life was not kind to some of these guys. And they're very hard used, shall we say, by their employers and by the world. And it interested me. And I wanted to try to show that a little And that's what this song is all about.
Well, here it is. Steel Guitar Heaven from Ry Cooder's I Flathead on 90.7 KPFK.
Oh, well, I wanna go to Steel Guitar Heaven. That's the only resting place for me. I wanna go to Steel Guitar Heaven. There's a lot of swinging cats I've been wanting to see. Like Joaquin Murphy and Jimmy Day. I'll shake hands with Speedy and shout hooray. That's Steel Guitar Heaven to me. I heard about Steel Guitar Heaven. I'm going when I die. I heard Paul Bigsby's been waiting. He's got something new that he wants me to try. Turns himself on, tells you a joke. It lights you a drink and it pours you a smoke. Paul, I don't think it's ready. That's Steel Guitar Heaven to me. Well, folks, I think the good Lord must love steel players. You know, he's made so many of them. Matter of fact, he's still trying. But the good Lord knows that the steel player's life on earth isn't often easy. So he set aside a little corner of heaven, custom made just for you. First thing you'll notice, there's always plenty of courteous free parking. And don't it just seem like that old triple neck ain't near as heavy as it used to be? Well, step inside and you'll find that the walls are covered in real knotty pine. And just take a gander at all that luxurious high-low shag continuous filament nylon pile wall-to-wall carpeting. Our Lord chose green and gold, my personal favorite. The tables and chairs are upholstered in genuine Naga hide, and here our Lord chose red. I think it's appropriate. There's always a lot of cowboy carrying on up on the bandstand, and you're bound to hear some old familiar voices calling, man, look who's here. Come on up and sit on in. It's C6th day again. Well, you can't get fired up in heaven. Union cards all paid. There ain't no bosses up in heaven. I heard Spade Cooley didn't make the grade. Everybody's got a story up in heaven. Some we all know well. All steel players go to heaven. Some just go through hell. But the good Lord loves each and every one. When your ragtime cowboy days are done, come up to Steel Guitar Heaven with me. That steel guitar heaven to me.
misunderstood. No offense, your credit ain't good. You white folks had it, it's all gone now. You never had no rhythm anyhow. Fernando says, take a clue. Fernando says, you're overdue. Fernando says, take your mind. Fernando says, it's cash on the line. Yeah, man, you want everything. You want me to share your card, take the chingazos here and there out. But there's no hondo here. Yes, too fast. I te guacho, vato.
But look here, friend, you gotta give me a break now. Man, well, a man without his Cadillac, you know, he really just don't, he just don't feel like a real man no more.
I need to get paid. I need some money here in order for me to continue this. No more me chingazos in and out. You need to pay up now. Ya no puedo trabajar por nada. Necesito dinero. Este trabajo muy duro para que uno esté aquí nomás batallando. I got a family to keep up.
I got a wife and two kids myself, man. You gotta cut me some slack here, friend.
You haven't paid me in a long time. No me has pagado en mucho tiempo. Necesito que me pagues ya. Si no, no voy a tentar el carro.
Well, I got $10. I was gonna buy the kids some new shoes, I guess. Well, I guess they, well.
My chavalos need calcos entramados too.
Well, you know, the way you run it, the way you run your business here, I bet your kids got more shoes and Carter's got pills. What about the tires and the wheels you promised me? You're gonna get me some wheels here. What happened to it? I need a valve job. I need one of those Edelbrock valve covers. It looks good, man. Double the Hollywood exhaust with the glass pack mufflers. That's what I'm looking at here. What's that gonna run me here?
Pay up the last bill, and then we'll talk about a new one. We need to get some zapatos for my kids. You're worrying about your kids. What about my children?
Well,
they need to eat too. Ellos tienen que ir a la escuela. They need their educación. We need to really sit down and discuss this.
It's the music, the lyrics, the voice of Ry Cooder along with Fernando Ruelas. And here, this is the record called I Flathead, The Songs of Cash Buck and the Clowns. And two pieces from this record, Steel Guitar Heaven, and followed with this piece called Fernando Says. And Ry, I must say, we were laughing in this as we were listening to this and having a great time. You were just saying earlier that that this is part of a three-part kind of interlude during the record that has to do with immigrants in Los Angeles. Please speak about this and how you see this, particularly the three songs. And we're going to hear the next two in a minute. Fernando Says, Spade Cooley, right. And Filipino Dance Hall Girl.
Well, sure. Fernando, being Fernando Ruelas, a very good friend of mine and the king of the lowriders, doing his bit, you know, as the disgruntled mechanic who won't give the white guy credit. So what does that mean? It means that the Mexicans used to not get credit. They had a tough time. Now, the white guy's out of a job, just cash buck. He goes in there and says, well, I need my car back. And Fernando says, no, I'm not going to give you your car back till you pay me. So the shoe's on the other foot, so to speak. The idea that cash just doesn't have any resources, see? Things aren't going so well for him. So I told Fernando, say, come on in and do this with me, you know, and let's just make this up at the end. And so he just started riffing in Calo and about trombajos and calcos and all this stuff. It's hysterically funny. Then we get Spade Cooley, spelled S-P-A-Y-E-D, which is Cash Buck's dog, Spade Cooley. that he named after the original band leader with the famous, the notorious Spade Cooley of country western fame. So he is a ferocious man, Spade Cooley, and a dangerous character. So Spade is rather, Cashbuck is saying, my dog, some kind of pit bull, no doubt, is bad. If you're going to come over to my house, you got to wipe your feet and show Spade your hands and show him what's in your pockets. Don't try anything here. In other words, if it's the gardener or perhaps the housekeeper or whatever it is, that's his attitude towards immigrants, you know. It's kind of homeland security, homegrown homeland security, you know. He doesn't need any fancy bureaucracy to take care of the business there. That's just the kind of guy Cash is. Third one being Filipino dance hall girl, in which you might say the white fella is thumbing his nose at the congregation because they don't like him hanging out at the Filipino dance hall down on Temple Street, where we used to have these dance halls and taxi dancers and so forth and so on. Don't have them anymore, you know. We have the sign that proclaims the Filipino historical district, but there's no district to proclaim. But in those days, in the 50s, like, say, in 40s and prior to that, you had all these Filipino dance halls. Must have been quite interesting. And so Cash, let's just say, for instance, the idea of being Cash likes this Filipino dance hall girl. Can't understand her because she speaks probably just Tagalog. Doesn't speak even Spanish. Cash knows a little Spanish, and he says, to hell with you guys in the congregation in the white church. The preacher's mad at him, the congregation snubs him, and they answer him back, Novus Ordo Seclorum, which is what it says on the dollar bill, the Masonic motto, whatever that really means, like it's our crowd type of statements, you know. So he says to them, I'd just soon be down at the dance hall with the Filipinos. I don't need you, you know. I don't care for you guys. You're a bunch of snobs.
In the history of immigrants, particularly in this part of the world and California, Filipinos got the lower end of the stick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. In Los Angeles, these folks were very despised, very downtrodden. I mean, and if you read your Carlos Bulosan, America's in the Heart, a very incredible memoir of this man, Carlos Bulosan, who was a migrant worker and then became a union organizer in Los Angeles and lived in Bunker Hill. And the it's like early Christian mystic writing. I mean, tough times he had at the hands of the police and everybody in California through the 30s and 40s, what, you know, you realize this was, and they were among the first in the Huelga movement, you know,
the strike,
you know, the farm workers.
The farm workers, right.
A lot of Filipinos in this, and this was a big story. We don't get taught this in the schools, but yeah, Filipinos had a very tough time. I mean, extremely tough.
Well, let's listen now to two pieces, Spade Cooley and Filipino Dancehall Girl, on 90.7 KPFK and the music of Ry Cooter.
Well, you hear a lot of talk these days about Homeland Security. Sounds to me like someone's going to make some serious money out of it in the usual way. Now, I got all the home security I need. He's a bargain. Well, I got a dog in this fight. I got troops on the ground. His name is Old Spade Cooley, and he's the meanest dog in town. But if you think I'm fooling, try busting in through the door. He'll tear you a whole brand new one, and you won't come back no more. Spade's a good dog. He's really bad. He's the best pal this poor boy ever had. Now, Spade might get suspicious when first you chance to meet him. So if you come a-calling, you better wipe your feet and empty out your pockets. Let him see your hands. Be sure to talk good English so he can understand. Loves to hear him croon. I know he'll be watching if fiddles ain't in tune. When you come round to our table,
says adios muchachos down on over the street. Spade's a good dog, yeah, he's really fine. So if you want to be a friend of mine, just pledge allegiance to our flag, try to sing on key, and you won't have no problem with my dog, Spade Cooley.
.7 FM, KPFK Los Angeles, the music of Ry Cooder. His new record is called I Flathead, the songs of Cash Buck and the Clowns. Ry, we have to say something. We've been talking off mic here about this particular piece, Filipino Dancehall Girl, and a couple of things came up. I told you that that I have this sense when I heard the song, and when I hear it all the time, I hear some sort of influence of Cuban music here. I mean, I got up and started dancing because I felt like it was almost like a danzón from the from the 30s. Mm-hmm. Tell us about this particular piece, how this came about, and the voice that you had come up with to for the right emotion.
Yeah. Well, I had the lyric idea. The idea had occurred to me about the song and the activity of it. So I tried different ways. I didn't like it. Then I was listening to the Nico Sacchito. That's one of these CDs you can get of his old music, being a Cuban sonero guy with a little group, Guaracheros de Oriente, I think he called himself. And he has this tune, and here it was in this incredible development with the chorus coming right away and the beautiful chord changes. And you just love it to death. So I said, all right, that's the way to do this. So I sat down and played with the record and learned the changes and messed with it and saw how the melody worked and the segundo voz, the harmony underneath the melody. That's the real secret of the whole thing. And it was kind of like puzzle. It's like a puzzle. Everything in Cuba is like that, you know, the little pieces. So then I got to where I could sing it. My lyrics, adapting the structure of the Nico Sacchito song to fit my English lyrics and what I was saying, shoehorning these things in, you know, not so easy to do, let me tell you. Spade Cooley's easy to do. That's natural. This was a little harder. So then you find that in singing it, to make it appear to be realistic, you have to sing it with this kind of physical attitude. You know, you have to kind of make that shape with yourself, like a cat from those days would do, you know, the way they stand, the way they look, the way they express with their hands and everything, and that affects how you sing, but it gets the mood across there. So we're imagining we're in this little nightclub and we're dancing around and it's dark and everything is very ambient and very mellow, and Augustin Lara, big car, pulls up in front, and here comes Augustin with Maria Felix on his arm, and they're coming in for drinks, and everybody, I mean, wouldn't that be nice? And that kind of stuff happened in L.A. all the time, only white folks didn't know about that. They weren't there when that happened.
So you're really creating a time and a space, mm-hmm, with these songs,
yeah,
to kind of take the listeners, people, into that era,
the mood of it,
mm-hmm, to imagine what it would be like for you to be there
for just a moment,
for just a moment,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The next piece I would like to play, the next couple of pieces, and we're running out of time. We've got 15 minutes or so left, but I want to play two more pieces from this record, and two pieces that I have to admit to you. I don't know if you caught my show over the last couple months, but these are the two pieces that I happen to play quite a bit, maybe more so than the ones we heard earlier. Number 11, the track 11, which is My Dwarf Is Getting Tired, is a song that's touched me quite a bit. But perhaps even more so, the one that really, I thought, brought it home for me was 5,000 Country Music Songs. And first, speak about My Dwarf Is Getting Tired and this story of a mobile home, of traveling
right
from Bakersfield, mm-hmm, to Anaheim.
Well, we all... Those of us of a certain age, your age and over, might remember California from a certain time. You could travel up Highway 99 and you'd see all kinds of things, little orange stands, orange juice stands, and little restaurants, and the occasional small town with the sideshow in it, and the kind of amusements that people had and the way they amused themselves or entertained themselves in a small way. In this case, the little sideshow has the dwarf and the fat man and the boxing kangaroo in it. Well, what kind of a show is that? It's a truck with a little trailer, maybe. And they pull into a country town like Turlock or wherever, and they set up and they make a few dollars and go to the next place. And they do this decade in, decade out, until things begin to change. The most dramatic change being Disneyland. And Disneyland was the corporate concept of you will do the following. We will create this faux environment, this ugly, you know, transactional kind of environment where money is changing hands, you know, where you will not be involved. You will be a spectator purely. you see, and led from one transaction to the next, or led from one strange, you know, warped, you know, image to the next. And as he says in the song, you know, dwarves and fat men might do the best they can, but they can't compare with Tomorrowland. You just can't. You can't beat it. You can't compete with it. So that's the end of a, that spells the end of a lot of things as far as Cashbook is concerned. No more country music bars. I mean, when smoking was banned in bars, country music went into steep decline. It had to become something else, and it's actually, I think, you know, it's one of these signposts. But in all respects, and so modern society isn't so good to the dwarves and the fat men, if you see what I'm saying. So that's the point the fella is making here. Plus the story I had to include about the man dying in the Mickey Mouse suit, the rubber suit, in the heat of Anaheim, very hot place, working overtime on a Sunday afternoon, because the people want to see this, want to see Mickey walk by. And the heat got him, and he collapsed, and the little kids jumped up and down on him, and he died. That's a true story. I heard this years ago. I never forgot it. So it was an opportunity to tell that, you know, put that sort of bookend around the whole thing, and that's sort of what this song is all about. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. I do, and I like for people to hear this song, and now that you tell the story, mm-hmm. I can understand even better this song, and I have to say that there is this very deep melancholy mm-hmm. that the song that is carried throughout mm-hmm. the song, this sort of pain, I guess. Mm-hmm. There is this sadness in a sense of what's been happening,
right.
And the lives of these people is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. My dwarf is getting tired on 90.7 KPFK from Rye Cooter's record, I Flathead.
It's time, it's what we need. We had a long run together. Life you can't compare. The world is changing, and it's getting strange out there. 40 years of motel rooms, cigarettes and magazines. Clear down to Bakersfield. You might have seen us on the highway so many times before. But my dwarf is getting tired. My fat man just won't travel anymore. Well, skinny looking farmers brought their families down looking for a fat time. We had to work all day just to make them spend one little thin dime. Like hot dog contests, man, you could eat them, might raise a buck or two. Boxing matches, you couldn't beat them. That midget kangaroo was a little too fast for you. Came down here, say goodbye to an old time friend of mine. He died inside his rubber suit out on the street of dreams. It was a hot July Sunday. He was working overtime. People like seeing Mickey walk by down in Anaheim. Dwarves and fat men just might do the very best they can. But they can't compare with
my role, and it seemed we had some real Western times together. Can't be like before, cause my dwarf is getting tired, my fat man just won't travel anymore. No, we won't be seen from Bakersfield clear up to Spokane anymore.
The music of Ry Cooder, I Flathead, is the album. It's the songs of Cash Buck and the Clowns. And he's my guest this hour on the Global Village. I'm Beto Arcos. Oh, God, what a great pleasure. I wish we had more time to talk, right? But before we play the last piece, which is called 5,000 Country Music Songs, would you speak about this song and tell us the story behind it?
Well, I've once read an interview with Harlan Howard, the great country writer, songwriter. So somebody asked him, said, how many songs have you written, Harlan? And he picked a number, 5,000. You know, you ask a question like that, you get an answer like that. Well, I thought, that's interesting, you know, all of them good, if it's true. Because Harlan Howard's a great genius, and he wrote some of the greatest American songs. But what about some guy, I thought, you know, who wrote 5,000 songs and no one wanted to hear him, no one was interested. He didn't come through, you know, except for his wife. She backed him up. She liked to hear him out there in the trailer, but he didn't connect, you know. He just didn't get the breaks. This is the kind of story you hear all the time. Some people have hopes and dreams or expectations, and they set out to do something, and in the end, they just walk off and leave it because it just didn't work. So in this case, he had a few opportunities, and Ray Price's tour bus came through, but Bobby Bear didn't want to hear the tune, and in those days, as the great Dan Penn said, a man with a Bobby Bear song can eat what he wants. So everybody wanted to get a Bobby Bear song, wanted Bobby Bear to sing your song, and then you were set. You know, you could eat what you wanted. But this fella here, and if you go riding out in the desert, to this day, you'll see, or the American West or almost anywhere, you'll see a lot of things. It's maybe a little abandoned house out in the distance there off the highway, or a trailer hooked up to a phone pole, but it's empty. And I used to wonder, you know, where'd they all go? What happened there? It's a mystery to me when I was a kid, you know, what went wrong maybe? And so we can see in this tune that it's just a hope that somebody had and that kept them going, but it didn't happen. Just didn't happen. So the guy just says, mister, take what you want. I'm out of here. I'm gone. That's it. That's an American story. You hear it all the time.
Right. Finally, how do you feel about this record? This is something that you developed over the last couple of years. It's been said that it is part of a trilogy. Mm-hmm. You started with Chavez Ravine, then My Name is Buddy, and now I Flathead. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, these three records have to do a lot with living where you live in California. Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Sure, of course. The loss of place in Chavez Ravine, the loss of your history, perhaps, we might say, you know, what happened to those people. In Buddy's case, Buddy the Red Cat longs for solidarity and unity, and he doesn't find it. He can't find it. He keeps looking for it. When are we all going to get together? When's it going to feel good? When do we get to the meeting he wants to ask Lefty Mouse in with the fried chicken and the speeches? When's it all? When's all that going to happen? So he keeps looking. And, of course, the failure of institutions. Finally, it's a poor farm girl that helps them. And, you know, the message being you have to take care of each other a bit. Just can't rely on the institutions anymore. They've failed miserably, as we can plainly see. And then the last bit here being the sort of, you know, farewell to do-it-yourself living. Cash Buck's a do-it-yourselfer, you know. He's handy with tools. He can fix it. He does it his way, makes his own car, makes his own music, doesn't take orders from anybody. So this is my, it's a little cumbersome to say trilogy, but it is in a way. It's like, okay, that's a style of, a way of life trilogy. It's the way of, of the way of the world is that I used to think the world was. And with the implosion of the record business, now here we sit doing these things, I think to myself, am I going to continue to do this work at all, you know? I kind of threw him a curve at Nonesuch, said, you're going to make a book now. Oh, my gosh, we're not in the book business. Well, do it anyway, but it's good. You said earlier, well, it's in stores, and I think to myself, such as what store? See, it's harder to get these things now. It's hard for people who are out of the habit of buying records. They're out of the... It's not part of so many people. It's not part of their daily living anymore. And so that's, I should make a record about that.
That's a good way to end this, Rai. Thank you so much for spending an hour with us this morning.
Thank you, Beto.
Really appreciate it. And we'll see you soon.
Good deal.
And here it is. 5,000 country music songs. Rai Cooter, I Flathead on 90.7 KPFK.
I started writing country songs in 1962. Just a dream that I had on my mind. Now my girl and I got married in 1963. We tried so hard to keep our dreams alive. Out on the countryside, you can't write country songs in town, they say.
That's what they told me.
Well, we packed up and moved out there. And as the time went by, we found that we like living free that way. Now I just to have around. Cadillacs and country songs were meant to be. I heard that old Hank Williams, well, he drove one just like mine. So I thought that something might rub off on.